This evening, we're joined by Michael from Downfall of Gaia on the release week of their new album, Sinners to Discuss. Thanks so much for joining us, Michael. It is much appreciated.
Thank you for having me.
Are you good?
Yeah, everything's good. We had our first snow here in Brooklyn yesterday, so it's already gone, though. So spring is coming. We got the sun out. So yeah, everything is good. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. It's dark, bleak, raining here in Ireland. Everything you expect from an Irish springtime. But no, other than that, we're great. We're great. So listen, thanks for joining us. And as I said, the new album's coming out on Friday, 17th by Metal Blade. And have you heard much reaction yet from outlets on it?
We got a few reviews back from primarily the European and German magazines, and the feedback's been really positive. We did a few podcasts already, same thing, everyone's really excited, and generally the feedback has been good, so I'm very happy about it.
Great. We reviewed the new album on two podcasts ago, Benny, and we were very excited by it, and especially one thing that we gushed over was the drumming. So as your little face lights up, so yeah, I mean, the drumming on this album is great. And one thing I wanted to talk about, being a bit nerdy on the drums, is your setup. In terms of, you know, how many rack toms do you have? Do you have floor toms, etc.? Just give us an idea of that.
Yeah, it's a pretty, for Downfall of Gaia, it's a pretty stripped down basic setup, which kind of allows me to focus on the parts of the kit that I do have. So it's kick, snare, one rack tom, one floor tom. So it's a classic four piece. And then I have hi-hats, two big crashes, and a ride cymbal.
And that's it?
That's it. Yep, just real minimalistic and making the most out of those items. Yeah.
Wow, that's phenomenal. Because the reason I asked this was because, you know, the fills are so intricate at times and there's so many different uses of the toms. And I'm actually blown away by how small the kit is and how you are having to, I mean, how difficult is it as a drummer to come up with different fills using such a small basic kit?
Yeah, that's part of the fun of it, though, is like, for example, if it was the opposite and I had 10 toms, then I could always just keep going like up and down all day. And it's easy to get distracted that way, just to do the easy, straightforward fill of high to low. So by only having snare tom, floor tom, and my cymbals, definitely forces me to reconsider, okay, am I doing my fill like, you know, snare upwards or backwards from the floor tom up there? And then all of those micro decisions of filling different accents and different surfaces as well. So like, a lot can be done even just with the snare drum by doing, you know, rim shots and really loud hits, and then also more quiet ghost note stuff.
It must push you as a drummer as well to be more inventive, like I said, but excuse me, have you ever thought about expanding your kit for maybe future albums? Or
For Downfall of Gaia, even this album, we did put a China symbol up there, but It was too abrasive. And if I'm blasting, let's say on the bell or on the crash, and then I'm hitting that, it was cutting through, and it was a little too angular for the vibe that we're doing. But for my other projects, I do have more cymbals, usually some stack cymbals, sometimes some like upside down bell cymbals. So it really depends on the band and the album and what it's kind of demanding from the drums. But for Downfall, even from the beginning, it's always felt right for me to have these, you know, less tools, a smaller kit, and try to maximize that instead of getting, you know, too many sound sources, let's say, or like 20 cymbals, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And it must make it a lot easier for load in and load out, huh?
Oh yeah, big time.
Benny?
Thanks, Jerry. Yeah, I I really got on board with your band on the last album, The Ethic of Radical Finitude, and I love that album so much. What was your approach, or how did your approach differ with the latest album compared to that last album? To my ears, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds a little bit more direct and a little bit more straight for the jugular, as it were. But what were your thoughts in terms of the approach for this record?
I mean, basically what you said, I mean, it's the same story a lot of people went through, the COVID, the pandemic, everyone was isolated. So it was important for me to come back, of course, to touring and to the world. But previously we did, I feel like we did a lot more storytelling, and sometimes the drums would really drop out and build for 3 minutes and, you know, then shoot off into space. But for this, we only had a couple spots on the album that we want that ended up being kind of like a soft interlude. But aside from that, I mean, the riffs and the motifs and the vibe of the record and every song kind of just started off more aggressive and more for the jugular, more just straight to the point. And as we were writing, it got to the end of eight, nine songs, and we're like, okay. Like, do we have to make these longer, shorter? And everything just felt right. So there wasn't a lot of rounds of edits or too many discussions about, oh, let's do a 10-minute song, or, oh, let's do a 3-minute song. It all just kind of happened very organically, even from the demo stages.
Yeah, and I think I... when listening to it, you get that impression. But I was saying this to Joey on the review, the first few listens, I was just listening on kind of general speakers, and it was pretty visceral. And I felt that straight away, that direct approach. But it was only really once I listened to it on my proper headphones that I think it all clicked for me and it became much more immersive. I guess my second question is more on this quite extreme type of music. I appreciate there's lots of different subgenres, and it's probably not helpful to pin it down to one or two. But often you associate with this extremity quite a thin production sound, whereas with Downfall, I've always noticed it's really fat, really bass heavy, immersive. And to me, that it sounds great. And like I say, that first time when you hear it on the headphones, it just sounded brilliant. Is that kind of what you're aiming for with the production? And what's your general views on Downfall's production?
Yeah, I have to agree with you. And I mean, I'm a fan of metal and music, even jazz. And I think it's important to appreciate all the albums from the 60s or the 90s, you know, the first wave of black metal, all that. But for where we are today, you know, I want to basically everything, not everything, but almost every band I'm in, I want the production to be clear and fat and dynamic, especially with the drums, because a lot of what I like to do are huge contrasts between soft and loud, even within the same beat. So I think having big, fat production for the drums or for the whole album is important. And I think it benefits this, you know, the vibe and story we're trying to tell, especially on the new album. I think every album I've been on with Downfall Guy, the drums have gotten clearer, fatter, and I think more more pronounced, and even more confident is how at least I feel and interpret it. So, and I think it shows in the production and also in the songwriting. Yeah.
Michael, you've fallen into the trap almost of talking about black metal, so I'm going to jump in quickly. And production is one thing that we often discuss, myself and Venny, on this show. I'm a huge black metal fan. You know, going back to the second wave, early Mayhem, etc. When you listen to, like, let's just take Blaze and Northern Sky, for example, and that sort of production, what's your thoughts on that? I mean, obviously it dates back to the era, but there's a lot of black metal bands like Lamp and Murmur, for example, are doing the same thing with that production. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, like I was saying a little bit before, I think all these albums, these classic albums, have a very special place in music history. I think it's important to know what was happening socially, or in the world atmosphere at those times. So I think it all kind of comes together, and it's influential. And my upbringing, how I listen to music, how I create music. But as far as production today, I mean, I also run a record label. So a lot of my listening is out of necessity almost. So I don't find myself longing for, you know, even I even pulled out Altar of Plagues is up there. I was listening to that recently. And certain albums will always have this, you know, place in my heart. But if I hear, like, let's say, for example, somebody submitted a demo to put on my label, but it was very lo-fi, kind of 90s sounding black metal, I'd be like, well, I don't know if that's something I want to, you know, listen to and or release today. So that's kind of where my head is at with it. Yeah, I mean, the older I get, the more I'm into just like clean drum production. I want to hear everything. Bands like even Imperial Triumphant, they have a really unique mix, and Kenny's a phenomenal drummer. So, you know, with that kind of mix, you want to hear all those, you know, jazzy flourishes. So yeah, that's kind of the direction I've been leaning in, is more to more clean sounding stuff lately. Yeah.
And there is a lot of, I mean, times are so much different and technology has advanced so much that Imperial Triumphant is a perfect example of, you know, without that production, it would literally just be a wall of noise. But so many black metal bands are doing it. There's another band called Black Braid who released an album last year. They have very modern production. I'm a bit of a sucker for the old school production, but that's just me. You know, each their own, but I can appreciate that. So your record label, I didn't know that, which is very interesting. What bands have you got signed to your label?
I've done a few of the bands, my other bands that I play in. So one of them is called So Hideous. The other one is called This Is Oblivion. We just played Damnation Festival, actually, last year. So, and then the most recent one is a band called Glass Casket, which is members of Between the Buried and Me, but it was the band before Between the Buried and Me.
Okay.
So tomorrow, actually, is the first release and the pre-order, and it's their first new music in 17 years. So a lot of the stuff with my label have kind of fell into a little bit of the mathcore world, math rock, and dabbles a little bit in some of the, you know, MySpace era bands that broke up in the math, you know, math jazz scene. But yeah, there was a resurgence during the pandemic, and there's like a really strong community of vinyl lovers. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. It was a hobby, and now it's almost basically my full-time job is just running the label.
How stressful is it? Because I know a guy in Australia who ran a record label, and he's just had to stop now because he was like, financially, mentally, time consuming, like he just didn't have time. And there's been so many people on these, I don't mean to disrespect by the, but DIY labels that have just been like, it's just too much. Like, is it that? Do you feel the same as that?
Yeah, it's a fascinating place to be, because you know, I also play music. So a lot of my friends who run labels either quit music or never played in a band. So they come at it from a very different perspective than I do. So running the label, it's almost like an extension of my drumming and my personality and the music I love. So of course I release bands that I've played in, but a lot of the bands I've signed are either friends or people I've seen on tour or seen open up for one of my favorite bands and be like, whoa, that was unbelievable. Let me go talk to them. So as far as running it, there were times in the last 3 years where I was like, wow, can I do this? But luckily a lot of people in the bands that are on the label are also very talented artists in other ways. So like Taylor, he's in a few bands on the label and he's my lead graphic designer. So a lot of the stuff I do, it's kind of just like this family vibe. It's like you're on the label, you play an instrument, and you have this other skill that I can, you know, outsource to you so I don't have to do it. So that's kind of how the label grew. And yeah, it's interesting. Almost all the employees are in a band or were in on a band on the label. So it's pretty interesting, and it's been fun. So
that's great. Just before I pass over to Venny again, because my kids are running right in the background, I just want to say, like, I mean, thanks to like you, Michael, Pete, who are releasing music and keeping, I don't mean to sound corny, but keeping the scene alive by releasing these bands, like a genuine thank you, because it keeps us fans being able to listen to music. So it wasn't a question, it was just more of an appreciation of what you're doing. So thanks for that. Benny.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's an extension of that theme is Downfall of Gaia are releasing the album on Metal Blade Records, which is clearly the other end of the spectrum. How do you guys find it being what I would consider, you know, quite an extreme and progressive band on the kind of most mainstream record label in our world? How does that, I mean, I'm sure you're going to be very nice about it, but how does that work out? How's that relationship?
I mean, from my perspective, Metal Blade has always been great to us, particularly the Metal Blade Europe office really stood up for us. And since the band is mostly based in Europe, I'm the only stateside musician, but they've been very supportive. They always come to our gigs in Hamburg or Berlin or Dresden. And doing this record, same thing. It was just easy. Even working on the artwork, I see you have it on your screen over there. It was maybe like 3-4 emails. We got a couple edits in, done. So I think the best thing and the nicest thing I can say about any major label, Metal Blade included, is just the resources they have. And you know, as you just told me, some of your buddies are closing down or XYZ, either financially or just from not having enough time. Running a label myself, it makes me appreciate Metal Blade even more, because it's like, okay, I play drums, I'm done. And then now Friday, it's like, oh, okay, the album's here. Great. I didn't have to do anything.
So different to running your own label. You can just sit back and go, there you go. There's the drum parts recorded. Away you go, guys. The album itself, and we're looking at the cover there, and it's a very intense at times album, like, it, you know, the feeling when you listen to it. And my understanding is the album's based on narrative of 8 different people, and like it touches on themes such as loneliness. And it's very on point because the last 3 years that we've been through, which you touched on previously, Michael, in terms of COVID, we've all been dealing with loneliness in our own sort of ways. And, you know, some people have come out the other side better for it. Unfortunately, some people might have been a bit different. When you listen back to the album, I don't know if you have or how many times you have, but can you feel that what you were trying to tell when you're listening back to the album, those feelings again?
Yeah, absolutely. Even for all the Downfall records, whenever I listen back, I can. I'm a very visual person when it comes to music. So like all the previous albums, if I listen to a song, I have vivid memories of a place or time of that album in that era where I was, whether it was my first European tour or whether I was living upstate just by the mountains. So for this record, same thing. I mean, listening through it, I can hear and feel a lot of things from the pandemic. So, you know, isolation, like you said, loneliness. A thing that many people didn't expect was losing full communities, just because you couldn't have those in-person communities. So it's very interesting to see how everybody coped and how we created an album kind of through this and the new communities that have risen, whether online or in person. And like you said, some people got better, some people got worse. So it's, yeah, listening back, it's, I definitely have a lot of vivid memories and images and like emotional responses for sure.
Yeah, it is a very, and going back to Venny's point, when you put headphones on, it can be a very emotional and dense album. But at the same time, there are parts, and this may sound strange, but there are parts that are quite uplifting. You know, the Bodies of Driftwood, which you released as the video, was that the obvious choice for releasing the single?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say there's definitely songs on the album that are more Downfall of Gaia, you know, like it sounds like us, it sounds like the other records. But Bodies as Driftwood and Final Vows are definitely two songs. When we started working on them, I was like, oh, this is different. This is something new. There, you know, there's that the synth sound. I'm doing more of just like a straight ahead synth rock groove with some slanky fills. And but immediately, even before we did the music video, we shot it here in Brooklyn. It had a vibe. It had an atmosphere. It basically kind of wrote itself. Same with the music video. It had this kind of like mundane, monotonous vibe, but also, like you said, some hope in there with some of the melodies and some of the synth work. So, yeah, it kind of goes both ways.
And just my final, sorry, Venny, just before you jump in, the other song that I mentioned on the review was one of my songs of the year so far is Eyes to Burning Skies, which is pretty much center of the album. It's like sort of bang in the middle. And for me, it feels like a centerpiece of the album. Like it still holds like the female vocals over, as an intro, but it's just so expansive. I don't know what your feelings are, whether that song has something special for you, but for me, it really does feel like sort of the centerpiece of the album.
Yeah. I mean, working with Lulu, her and I also did the This Is Oblivion record during the pandemic. And yeah, having her on the tracks just elevated it. I mean, when we were writing, we said, okay, we do want do a few things different, and one of them was, yeah, let's see if we can get a female vocal melody line on one or two songs. So and yeah, we ended up putting Lulu on two songs, and in retrospect, yeah, it does feel very much like the cornerstone of the album. Like you said, it's in the middle, it's a little more expansive, a little bit more in that realm of previous Downfall of Gaia stuff. Yeah. Like really telling a story, not so in your face. Again, playing with that hope versus despair kind of back and forth thing. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That yin and yang sort of light and dark sort of thing. Yeah, 100%. Sorry, Venny, I'll hand over to you now, mate. Sorry.
No worries. I mean, I don't really necessarily have a question, but those two tracks for me as well are the real standout. And for me, Downfall of Gaia have always been a very progressive band and have pushed things with the long and complex song structures, the different sub-genres of extreme music that they bring in. But for me, those tracks did feel a bit different and quite refreshing in a way, coming from Downfall of Gaia. And certainly that kind of late 80s Depeche Mode synthy sound that I don't think I'd heard before. And it reminded me a bit of an album released on Pelagic a year or two ago by The Crown that was really dark, and it wasn't heavy in traditional sense, but it was really dark and heavy in other ways, and it was really nice echoes of that. And yeah, like you guys have both said, the female vocals as well for me just felt really fresh, and it just felt a completely natural fit with the style of music being as dark and progressive as it is. It just added this totally different shade to it, and I thought that was brilliant. So yeah, sorry, it's not really a question, but I don't know if you've got any comments on any of those things, really.
Yeah, I mean, first off, Crown, great band. I remember years ago, their first EP, I got it on CD on a little cardboard thing. And unfortunately, it got stuck in my car like 10 years ago, whatever that was. So that CD is gone. But since then, they've put out some amazing records with Pelagic and Stefan, if I'm pronouncing his name right, Azam. He also did sound for us on a few tours. So okay. He's a very good front of house sound engineer. Obviously, you can tell because he's did all the stuff on the album too. But so big fan of Crown. But yeah, I mean, Crown's an influence, but definitely happy that we were able to find this middle ground. Because I look at bands like Cannibal Corpse and long career, storied career. I think it's 17 or 19 albums now. And they have a new album out, and you know what you're getting into. It's going to be Cannibal Corpse. It's going to be good. It's going to be solid. But I think for me, and I can probably speak for everyone in the band, it's important for us to sound like Downfall Guy, but also, I mean, we're not the same people we were 3 years ago or 5 years ago or 8 years ago on those albums. So we're constantly evolving as humans and also as artists, because I mean, it's exciting to find new instruments or new sounds or a new way to play a blast beat or a D beat. So I think that was important to us, and I think it came out in the music. So I'm definitely happy that you feel that way as well.
Put you on the spot for the last question, right? And be as honest as you can. And I know it's because it's still fresh, but do you think this is the best Downfall album, in your opinion?
Yeah, I would like to say yes. Yeah, I mean, I feel like every artist would say the same thing. Oh, my newest work is the best work.
Yeah.
But I do very much feel like everything is just growing and going upwards. The energy, even personally and as a band and all the projects I'm in, but particularly Downfall. I mean, I still remember our first tour together. I still remember where we came from. And yeah, it just feels like the songwriting and the interpersonal level, everything is on the right page and everyone is communicating, even though we are across the Atlantic from each other. We're talking via email, message board, WhatsApp, all that. And it feels like everything is lining up the way we want it to. So yeah, I'm super proud of the record. I think we achieved exactly what we wanted to, and I'm happy it's connecting with people. That's the whole goal.
Well, you should be very proud of the record, because Benny and myself, we really enjoyed it. And I think you're heading out to Europe soon. Are you on tour, if I'm correct? So
yeah,
might have to try and swing a date over there at some point and come and Benny, if we might be able to swing a night away. If we put the permission slips in early enough with the other halves, we might be okay.
Just one last question. I'm just interested, not strictly on Downfall Guy business, but with your other bands, have you got anything in the pipeline? Obviously, this is consuming a lot of your energy right now, but in terms of So Hideous or Number 12, Looks Like You? Or...
Yeah. So Downfall, yeah, we have the European tour in April, mostly mainland Europe. We're playing Damnation with Downfall in November. So that'll probably be closer to you.
Yeah.
I don't think any other UK dates yet, but probably 2024, there might be a more authentic, full UK, full Europe tour. And then for the other projects, yeah, So Hideous, we have a new song recorded. It's not out yet. We're still figuring out how to release a single without a vinyl. That's something I'm trying to figure out. I'm like, oh, vinyl makes sense, but if you have a single, it's like, well, what do you do?
An expensive single, that.
Yeah, exactly. So Hideous has got some shows coming up, a lot of US stuff, and then we're gonna even head to Japan this year, which is very exciting. It'll be the first time for that project to be there. Really great country, great music scene. And then the most other very exciting thing, I joined a one man kind of like hip hop hardcore project called Eulogy from Baltimore. And now it's drums and he is singing, playing guitar, and also doing samples and the backing tracks. And we had our first gig last week, and it was phenomenal. It was nice to do something completely out of my comfort zone, because you know, you call me, you want a hard, aggressive blast beat, I'm like, no problem. But you know, a hip hop influenced kind of hardcore group in the vein of horror or Ghost Mane, something like that.
Right.
Definitely challenged me to do some new things on the drums, and also it allowed me to have a different perspective of, well, do I play the same beat as the recording, or do I play a counter beat on a different cymbal, or do I just play nothing for this part? So it was very interesting.
You're a busy man.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeez, that's great. Michael, thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you, and best of luck with the album coming out on Friday. And hopefully we might catch you at Damnation then, Benny. I think that's probably on the cards.
Yeah. So
sounds good.
Michael, yes. Thank you so much for your time. Take good care.
Thank you. Thank you. Man. Talk to you.